KUOW Seattle, this is The Record. I'm Bill Radke. It's Monday, which means we've got two panelists in the studio to talk about the stories that moved them this weekend. The biggest of those, the death of chef and author Anthony Bourdain.
In my worldview, food certainly plays a role, hopefully, in bringing some kind of enlightenment and understanding and openness and appreciation of other cultures.
Anthony Bourdain was also a television host at the shows A Cook's Tour, No Reservations, and most recently, Parts Unknown. He was found dead on Friday in France, and the cause of death was suicide. Here with me to remember Anthony Bourdain and his legacy are our panelists. Andrea, will you say your last name for me?
Otanas.
Otanas is a journalist and lecturer in journalism and communications at the University of Washington, former editor at the Seattle Times. Xiaoqing Chao, former food editor at the PI, and author of the cookbook Chinese Soul Food, A Friendly Guide for Homemade Dumplings, Stir Fries, Soups, and More. Welcome back.
Thank you, Bill.
So, Xiaoqing, you have cooked with Anthony Bourdain.
I have.
You posted a photo of you and him on Instagram. What were your experiences with him?
You know, when I was at the PI, he would come through town every year or every other year on tour for one of his books. And so I had plenty of opportunities to interview him. And also on one of those trips, I decided that I would invite him over for dinner because he, you know, had been on the road for such a long time. And anybody who's been on the road knows that a home-cooked meal is something that is kind of a godsend. So I thought, well, I'll do that. Most people would probably be intimidated to cook for somebody like that. But I thought, you know, it's just food. And that's what it's about, is just coming together around the table. And I made pot stickers for him. And subsequently, he invited me on his show, No Reservations, to make pot stickers with him. So that was my little 15 minutes of Tony Bourdain fame.
What do you remember about that dinner?
When we cooked together mm-hmm. on show, it was really fun because he and the crew came over and they took over our house, and I had people sitting on my counter and, you know, cameras all over the place. And Tony, and he's so tall and I'm not, so it was just funny for us to, he was like hunched over my counter as I was trying to demonstrate how to make dumplings.
And in fact, I think we have some audio from that.
Okay, now for the real reason I've come. Xiaoqing's pot stickers. Dinner ready yet?
You know, you have to put in a little elbow grease yourself.
Oh, no. I'm not Bobby Flay. I don't cook on this show.
You're cooking in my house. Don't give me any crap.
Where's that cute Jamie Oliver when you need him? Oh, well.
Don't give me any crap.
Oh, well, you know, I was trying to be a little irreverent because I'm usually a pretty serious person. So I was trying to play along a little bit. But it was really fun to have him and the crew. And he's so gracious, you know, despite all of his brashness out there. He's such a gracious guest.
Anthony Bourdain was not just a chef and food writer. He was a traveler. He told the New York Times last fall how travel affected him.
I loathe, in principle, the idea of adhering to any orthodoxy or strict belief system, because my travels have shown me, as I move from place to place, that what I thought yesterday is, in fact, completely wrong again and again.
Andrea, you were telling us that Anthony Bourdain influenced how your children act when they're traveling?
Absolutely. He is a major teacher to my children. In fact, it was my children who turned me on to Anthony Bourdain. And my daughter took off for Southeast Asia and is a really good cook, in part because of Anthony Bourdain. And, you know, this weekend I was in Florida for a teaching conference. And so I heard about his death on the radio at 7 a.m. right when it happened. NPR broke in. And Anthony Bourdain was so important in my children's life and therefore my life that I texted them right away because I wanted them to hear it from me, right? That's how important he was in our worldview and my children's lives. So, you know, you mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned David Remnick or not, I think, but David Remnick wrote something for, I think it was Eater this weekend, where he talked about how Kitchen Confidential came to be and how he was sort of the connective tissue there. And Remnick said that Anthony Bourdain helped us get to know the other. And I like to think Anthony Bourdain unothered the other, right? He got out of the way and let people tell their stories. He let them be who they were and led us there. So, yeah, he's been huge.
You're nodding your head, Xiaoqing.
Well, because I found out about it on LinkedIn, of all places. It wasn't in my, you know, food feeds. It was I woke up in the morning and I checked. I don't know why I checked LinkedIn that at that point in on that day, but I did, and I saw a mention of it from somebody who is in communication. So it wasn't even somebody in food, and it was on LinkedIn. So Tony transcended everything that was about being a chef and about being a cook, and became very much a part of our broader culture. And that, I think that's what has made it so hard for a lot of people to kind of take in this news.
What did you think of the image he boosted? I don't know if he created this, but the hard living chef, you know, the drug use was part of it. And what did you think of that image of the culinary world?
Well, it's a reality still. He gave voice to it. And I think over the years, as he matured as a person and as somebody who had a global platform, he understood that maybe, you know, he glorified it in some sense with that first book, and he's toned it down. He had toned it down a bit. I don't know that he regretted that, because he was telling his truth and telling the truth of a lot of people who work in the industry. But a lot of the issues that he experienced still exist, and that hasn't necessarily quieted down. I think we are collectively more aware of it and are talking about how we can address some of those the drugs and that harsh life. And, you know, a lot more chefs now are flaming out and looking for balance, whatever that means. So I think we're definitely more aware of it now. But he did. He gave voice to that lifestyle in a way.
Both of you are journalists. What did you think of how the media has covered the suicides of Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, right around the same time?
You know, I've been paying attention to that, because we do like to teach about that in our program for sure, hewing closely to the advice that organizations like SAVE and Forefront here on the UW campus talk about, trying to educate about mental health and suicide prevention. And what I'm noticing, and this is fabulous, is that fewer and fewer people are using the word committed when talking about suicide. That is becoming, I think, ingrained, which is useful. I see it. I found it a bit this weekend. I also have to say that I do know that out there are details, and I don't know if they're true or not, because I haven't read them. I have purposely avoided them, about the manner of death. And I think that's one of those things that we need to teach journalists, that is, you know, unless there is some compelling news reason that is the story, that, you know, that doesn't need to be in the stories because of contagion concerns. So I would say, by and large, what I took in over the weekend, and it was all over the place, from blogs to New York Times to, you know, mainstream media, that I've seen mostly respectful coverage.
We just have time to talk about one more story from this weekend. I want to give a note to our listeners that, you know, if you are very, very troubled, if you think about taking your own life, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That phone number is 1-800-273-TALK. So 1-800-273-8255. A lot of students graduated this weekend or are about to graduate, which sometimes is a reminder of classmates who didn't make it that far. And Marysville-Pilchuck High School is going to have empty seat at this week's graduation ceremony after the years after the shooting there. Franklin High School students protesting Friday over a fatal shooting of a student in Martha Washington Park. And Andrea, what struck you about those events?
You know, I was thankful for the Marysville-Pilchuck High School story. Those students who were in that story were freshmen when that terrible thing happened in 2014. And I connected to, of course, what the students who were the survivors of the shooting at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, what they're doing, how they're hitting the road now that they've graduated, to get students organized and get them registered to vote. So two things. A, I choose to see hope in these stories to see that what these students are doing who went through that. This is three things, the voting, and then also that protest that happened or awareness that happened down in Franklin High School last week after that terrible shooting of the young man in the park. And so I am just seeing some positivity come out of this terrible situation that our children are going through, the anxiety that they're having. And so I just think it's important to pull all that together so that we do not start to normalize those shootings and realize that we all have a role in reaching out to the people who are nearest to us to help them through this.
Xiaoqing, how are you talking to your kids about this?
Well, both my kids, I have a third grader and a sixth grader, and it's very real to them because they have to do these drills, emergency drills, and that's not something they should have to think about. Maybe a fire drill, but not this kind of thing where they have to go on a lockdown. Or my daughter, who's in middle school, you know, when all the kids walked out, they walked out. Like, why is an 11-year-old thinking about walking out of school to protest guns? So it's, for us, it's a visceral subject that we have to talk about. And I kind of just go by what my kids' awareness level is. I don't want to just pound them with too much information because they have to be ready to receive it. So I listen very carefully for what my kids are talking about and then address it at that level. But again, these are things that I now have to think about too. And that's you know, on top of all the regular puberty stuff and social media stuff and mean girl stuff. And then now there's all of this. So our jobs as parents, as citizens, is that much more difficult.
Well, thank you both for helping us reflect on the weekend that we just went through and both of these issues, of course, continuing out into the future, right? Andrea Otanas is a journalist, lecturer in journalism and communications, University of Washington, and the former editor of the Seattle Times. And Xiaoqing Chow is food editor at the Seattle PI, and she's written the cookbook, Chinese Soul Food, A Friendly Guide for Homemade Dumplings, Stir-Fries, Soups, and More. And it's been great to talk with both of you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning into The Record on KUOW Seattle.